tuned in to the Community Cats Podcast. Ready? Let's go.
Welcome to the Community Cats Podcast. I am your host, Stacey LeBaron. I've been involved helping homeless cats for over 20 years with the Merrimack River Feline Rescue Society. The goal of this podcast is to expose you to amazing people who are improving the lives of cats. I hope these interviews will help you learn how you can turn your passion for cats into action. And today we are speaking with Sharon Marcosello. Sharon has been an animal lover all her life and got her first pet cat at the age of 4. In 2007, she began volunteering with the Fayette Humane Society in Fayette County, Georgia, fostering cats and working at pet adoption events. In 2010, she wrote her first grant for the organization, and in 2011, they invited her to join the board of directors as secretary. Still on the board, writing grants and fostering cats, Sharon is the author of a nonfiction book, Live Well, Grow Wealth, and has two mysteries published by Sunbury Press, Going Home and Secrets of the Galapagos. Her new cozy mystery series with Level Best Books begins with Trap, Neuter, Die. It features a protagonist sentenced to community service doing TNVR with an animal rescue group. Sharon may have drawn upon some of her own rescue adventures and experience trying to change a county animal ordinance. But fortunately, unlike this tale of fiction, she never found a dead body. Sharon, welcome to the show.
Glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
So you mentioned you had your first pet cat at the age of 4. Is that what turned your passion for cats like into action, or what was it?
I think so. I always loved animals. I liked all kinds of animals. And my mother was a dog person. She always wanted us to get a dog, but my father didn't like dogs, but he thought cats were okay. So we got a cat, and I was fine with me, a kitten, you know. Even though the first time I saw the kitten, I was so excited, and I ran and grabbed it, and she scratched me. But that still did not deter me from being a cat lover. So I've had them all my life. I just love them and like a member of the family.
Yeah. Well, and we learned to respect them. I grew up with a cat named Duncan, who was about 7 years old when I was born. So I was, you know, she was like 10 when I was a toddler. And she taught me quite a few lessons about personal space when at a very young age, you know. So I think our cats all teach us a lot of life lessons and how to be active listeners to the needs of those cats. And rather than saying, you know, cats must be this way for us, it's a negotiated partnership, I would say.
Yeah. I like their independence. They're not so needy, but yet they're loving too. So
I have some experience down in Georgia. What is life like for a community cat in Fayette County? What's been your experience with the community cats being a volunteer and working with a program there? From your sense, you're at a board member level. What's life like for community cats down there?
Well, one of the issues is that our climate is mild enough so that cats breed all year. There's no such thing as kitten season. Their kitten season lasts all year. I used to think, you know, the spring was kitten season, but a cat living in the wild in, you know, a place like Georgia can probably have 3 litters a year. And so it's very hard to get the population under control. And we also don't have spay-neuter laws that some of the northern states have. There's a lot of good old boys that, you know, don't think, they don't want to get their pets fixed. And, you know, they think it's a human right to, you know, be able to breed their pets. It's an ongoing challenge. We never run out of cats.
So with the Fayette Humane Society, with your involvement, have you seen a change over the last decade in terms of the demands on the organization? Has the organization stayed pretty much the same in size and serving the same amount of cats, or has your organization been forced to grow?
I think we've grown quite a bit, because when I started, I think we only took in 200, 250 cats a year. And the last couple of years, we've taken in over 1,200. We're expanding to transport, working with some northern areas, especially like kittens, because they have actual kitten season. So there's seasons where they don't have any kittens, and you have people that want kittens. We have kittens all the time. So sending kittens, and even, you know, even some young cats, some, you know, some mature cats end up go on a transport, and they usually get adopted quite quickly after they arrive at their the rescue group or shelter in the north. So it's been a good partnership. Taking in 1,200 cats a year, we don't have, you know, we're not going to adopt that many around in Georgia, but that by transporting, we probably transported 500 or 600 and finding homes elsewhere.
Yeah. And if folks are interested in listening to other podcasts about programs in Georgia, you can feel free to just search Georgia on the Community Cats podcast website. I'm involved with the Community Cat Clinic, which is in Woodstock, Georgia, and actually opening up a second, had to open up a second unit in Duluth, Georgia. So there's two clinics there, which are interesting models that you might want to check out. And that's the Community Cat Clinic in Georgia. But, you know, feel free to search Georgia. We have quite a few interviews from folks from that area. And really, at the end of the day, you know, we want to reduce our cat overpopulation situation and providing alternatives for access to affordable spay neuter, similar to what the Community Cat Pyramid talks about. Also, Sharon, we were talking a little bit before we hit the record button about your experiences in participating in some of the efforts of the Fayette Humane Society's Trap, Neuter, Vaccinate, and Return program. So can you share a little bit about that program and what was it like for you being sort of the first timer out there learning to trap cats?
Well, I mean, when I started volunteering, I didn't really know very much about the Trap, Neuter, Return program. I mean, I just thought all cats were pets and, you know, there'd be homes for everybody. And later I learned, you know, talking to some other volunteers, I learned there's some cats that are, the outdoors is their home and they're not suitable for living in a home. They don't want to be pets. And so it was a whole new area. We do take in a lot of the kittens from Trap, Neuter, Returns. If they find a mom with kittens, if they're young enough to socialize, we do take those in. So we've gotten some that way. And I've tried taming some feral kittens before as a foster with varying degrees of success in the same litter. And some are, you know, socialized a lot quicker than others. But they all eventually got socialized. It just took longer. But as the grant writer, I wrote a lot of grants for TNR. I was able to get from, you know, different foundations, get grants for us to pay for the Trap, Neuter, Return. And we've been lucky. We have a couple of low-cost clinics in our area that give good pricing for TNR. Actually, they have lower prices for the caretakers taking it in rather than the organization. They'll actually charge us like about $10 more as an organization. They think that we have the money. Whereas some poor trapper that's paying for it herself, they charge more. But we have the Lifeline clinics in Atlanta. Then there's a Help Spay Neuter clinic in Newnan. And a few years ago, there's a clinic called Jazzy Paws that opened up in Jonesboro. So we have a lot of resources. It's been challenging since the pandemic. They had some turnover with vets and equipment and everything. So it's been harder. And then, of course, with inflation, prices have gone up. But it's still better. I mean, before we were using all those clinics, we were paying a lot more for spay neuter for our animal adoption animals. So,
right. So, and when you write your grant applications, you say you write quite a few for TNR. I know that there are some folks out there that feel that it's really hard to get money for the spay neuter cost for Trap, Neuter, Return or for the general public. Have you felt that being the case?
Well, I look for grants that are targeted for that. I mean, there are pets. I've gotten some from PetSmart. You know, they have some that are really specific for that. I've gotten one from Petco. I've got one from Bernice Barber Foundation. I got one from Best Friends one time. So I go for things that's a fit with what we do. I don't try to pitch something that I know they're not going to support or that we're, you know, we're not going to be able to handle.
Yeah. And so you went out trapping with one of your lead trappers in the organization and you were setting the bait on the traps and you were doing that for a specific purpose because you've decided to write this book called Trap, Neuter, Die. And we're profiling it here in November because it might be a cool holiday gift for friends and family. And so, you know, what gave you the idea of doing a novel, a mystery, but have it focusing on TNVR?
Well, I've written a couple of mysteries, so I'm always like looking at, you know, the kind of the main thing is you find a dead body and it's all the mystery. And so I thought being out in the dark going down would be a good, you know, kind of a good spooky environment to be finding a dead body anyway. And they say write what you know, and I kind of wanted to shed some light on this. I also have some local politics that comes in with Fayette County has an animal ordinance. The way it's written is GNBR is basically illegal because it doesn't really provide for feral cats. I mean, they look at all cats have to be inside or on a leash, and they define somebody as an owner. If you feed it for 48 hours, you're an owner. So if you trap that and keep it overnight and take it to the clinic and then keep it overnight again, you're the owner. And so then when you let it go back to its outdoor home, you're abandoning your pet. So they can actually do that. And I mean, no one really enforces it. But of course, in my story, there's a cop. You find out later he has his reasons for doing that, but he spread that ordinance. He hates this woman that's doing the trap neuter, so he's looking for something to get her on. And he's found that in the ordinance. There's a scene where he actually arrests her when they're out trapping, and a cat goes in the trap that's already ear chipped, and so she just lets it go, and he catches her doing that and says, "You're abandoning the cat," and takes her to jail. And so my protagonist sees that and she goes, "This is stupid. This is a stupid law. We need to fix it." And so that she takes that as a quest to do it. And actually our organization had a similar experience working with the Fayette County commissioners to try to bring in, add some definitions, things like that, to make exceptions for feral cats and caretakers and everything, exempt them from the definition of owner. And it seemed like a very simple project, but it wasn't. And so I'm a little drawn a little bit of that experience with getting involved in the local politics.
If you want to catalog all your cat sightings to manage your colonies easier, then Whisker Tracker is for you. It's a free mobile app that lets you create cat profiles, see your cats on a map, and track the health and status of all your cats. Download the Whisker Tracker mobile app today. Are you a proud cat parent looking for the perfect, affordable health care for your kitty? Well, look no further than the Community Cat Clinic, conveniently located in Woodstock, Georgia, just north of Atlanta and not too far from the Tennessee and South Carolina borders. The health and happiness of all cats are the top priorities at this feline-only hospital. From preventative care, spay, neuter, and vaccines, to specialized and innovative treatments like full mouth dental, ultrasound, radio, iodine therapy, emergency blockage cases, they've got your cat's well-being covered. For the TNR community and local shelters, they offer easy-to-access, low-cost spay-neuter services and volume appointments. So if you want to do a large TNR project, this is the clinic you want to go to. It's worth the extra trip. Appointments are available most days. Check out the Community Cat Clinic online at communitycatclinic.com or visit them in person at the Walmart Shopping Center at the Shops of Trickum on Highway 92 at Trickum Road in Woodstock, Georgia. More purr, less price. Are you getting your message across to your entire community? Do they know what programs you offer and what they can do to help? Learn more about how to effectively market your organization or just sharpen your skills with a free self-paced marketing course, The Fundamentals of Marketing on Maddie's University. The course is designed to provide a basic understanding of marketing and provide you with templates and tools to elevate and improve your organization's brand, voice, and audience, and have fun while doing it. You'll receive a strategic marketing plan template to download free. Go to university.maddiesfund.org and search marketing to enroll now. I'm learning a lot as I speak with folks all around the country. The laws are so different, and the way that municipalities approach cats in the community, it's just so different. It can go from question of ownership, you feed a cat a couple of days and it's yours, and then to the fact that you're treating it like wildlife and you can't remove it, or if you get it spayed and neutered, you put it back, but you can't do anything else. I mean, there's just so many different layers to the legalities around cats, and also how, I mean, cats are looked at like personal property too, and, you know, valued significantly less than your couch.
Yeah, if somebody kills your cat, they might, you know, give you $50 to go buy another cat or something.
Right. In Massachusetts, I believe they value the cat at around $35. And so it's just very interesting, and for good or for bad, because sometimes ordinances are created with the best of intentions, but they backfire.
Yeah.
You have to be extremely careful with how you word ordinances so that then it can't be interpreted in a way that actually hinders the work that you're trying to do and prevents the assistance out there for your community cats. And it's very nuanced. I mean, you can really just focus on that 100%. And in New England, where we've been doing TNR for years, we really have very few laws in place with regards to cats. And it's probably worked to our benefit, but I'm not sure that's the best course of action to take. We're not municipally run. We are private organizations that have done that all throughout New England. Our cat rescue and assistance programs are all through private nonprofits in general. There are very few municipal organizations that deal with cats. There are a handful of them. There's Springfield, Mass, being an example of one of those organizations where actually the animal control officers will go out and do some of the TNR. They will go out and actually assist with that program, and they're very supportive of it.
Yeah, I wish NARS did that.
Yeah, I mean, we have, as our TNR programs, we have a lot of targeted groups, and as we got the situation under control, then animal control could take it on because it was manageable. You know, when you first go into an area and there hasn't been any trap, neuter, return, trap, neuter, vaccinate, return done, it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
So you really need a heavy effort. But then as the colonies get down in size, as you said, you're removing the kittens. Just by doing that, you've probably reduced the size of the colony by 30 to 35%. And then if you take the friendlies out or cats that are determined to be abandoned that need extra support, then you're probably taking another 10% out. So I usually tell folks, you know, when you go into a colony, you're going to reduce the cat population by at least 40% when you're first in there, and then you can pick away at it. And so the number of cats is going to go down, especially if you're in an area where you're being refed the vacuum effect from other areas. You're there to watch to see when you have newcomers, and you can address those issues, and you'll be able to see the true reduction in the cat overpopulation there. But boy, with ordinances, sometimes it just makes it resource heavy to be in there negotiating that side of the situation rather than being out there and getting as much spay neuter available to the owned cats as well as to the feral cats that need to be returned. So it's a huge challenge. And I think it's wonderful that trap, neuter, die exists. It's part of this normalization of TNR. Let's just get it out there. I mean, do you think a lot of people know about TNVR?
No, they really don't. And I find that I'm in several writers groups, so I'm pitching pages and things like that. And I'm educating my fellow writers, you know, because most of them don't know anything about it. In fact, there was one girl that came in. I said something about there was a line that, oh, and the cat, and none of the cats in the area have ear tips. And she wrote, she hadn't read some of the earlier chapters when I had explained it. And she says, what does that mean? What is that supposed to, am I supposed to know that? So I'm educating.
Right. Well, like the line, you know, it's hip to be tipped, right? It's just trying to get those phrases out there. And so that then our general public will know when they see cats that have an ear tip, it's okay. If the cat looks good, looks fine and healthy and all that, most likely that cat's got somebody. It's probably got more than one family or one group of people taking care of it too. I think many community cats are fed at multiple locations. I really do believe that. It's really working hard to get this trap, neuter, vaccinate, return out into our general population because we are a very insular community. So we can talk amongst ourselves, but we are preaching to the choir. And books like these are great. And that's why I normally don't profile many authors and books on the podcast. But this one just really stood out to me because here you are, you have it right in the title. It's educational, and I just think it's great to just have fiction referencing this as a way to handle cats that are outdoors.
Yeah, hopefully there'll be a lot of readers that just like to read mysteries. and they'll learn something about it. With my protagonist, I have her, she's sentenced to community service, so she doesn't know anything about it. So she's learning about the process along with the reader and, you know, asking questions. She has a dinner guru who's a little rough, likes cats a lot better than people. So, you know, they eventually get on better, a little conflict at first.
I'm going to circle back for a minute before we have to close out, Charon, because you do volunteer as a grant writer, and we talked about it earlier. Grant writing is a hot topic in this space, for sure. If you had to share one or two tips for other folks that are doing grant writing for their organizations, what would you pass along?
Well, I think you want to make sure that your proposal is a fit for what the organization is funding, because otherwise you're just kind of wasting everybody's time. Read the requirements carefully, give them what they ask for, and then you have better chance at success. They're very competitive. Don't give up. Sometimes, even though you have everything right, they have more good proposals than they have funds to support. But like, if you keep going for grants, that what your organization can do, and being a writer, that's why they asked me to do it, because I'm a writer. I write fiction. I write books. You know, well, writing a grant proposal shouldn't be like writing a fiction. They want a lot more details, numbers and things like that, budgets and what you've done. And that's really important to, you know, to tell your story with the numbers. So I had to learn how to do all that rather than just, you know, writing some flowery prose, you know, convincing somebody to give me money. So.
Right, right. And another huge challenge, I think, in the grant space is the tracking.
Yeah.
So I have the How to Track Those Pesky Grants blog on my website. And you can just Google that, and we'll try and make sure we put this in the show notes too. But the whole, you received the grant, which is wonderful. You spent all the time on the applications, which was also wonderful. Now you've got to track it for the follow-up report that has to happen.
Yeah, if you don't do that, then you're not going to get another grant.
Right. Yeah. And sometimes they want you to do social media posts. So that's dealing with, you know, one person over here. And then the other is the tracking from a clinic side or from the adoption program side. And then there's the expense side, you know, medical expenses, veterinary expenses. If you're working with multiple veterinarians, that can be tough to track that, especially if you aren't using QuickBooks Online. If you're doing it with Google Docs and tracking it that way, that's, you know, it's one way to do it, but then if people change out, you've lost your history there. And so it just, you know, tread carefully. I've entered into the world of actually applying for too many grants, getting too much money, and then the organization just can't keep up with the tracking. And so you have to be really careful that you're not over committing and make sure you're prepared for handling those grants.
Yeah.
So if folks are interested in Trap, Neuter, Die, which is now out in November of 2024, out for the holidays, great holiday gift, folks, how would they do that?
Well, you can go to my website. It's SharonMarcicello.com, SharonMarcicello.com. It's on Amazon, wherever books are sold. You could ask your library to order it. If you have a local bookstore and it's not there, you can ask them to order it. If you want to buy it online, Google my name, Charon Marcicello, and you're probably going to find it more easily. I'm the only Charon Marcicello. So everything you see online is about me.
Charon, is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners today?
Well, thank you very much. And, you know, keep trapping cats. One day we won't, hopefully we won't have a problem with overpopulation.
100%. And if folks are interested in finding out more about how to reduce your cat overpopulation, we do have a YouTube video out there specifically titled on strategies on how to reduce cat overpopulation. So I recommend you check that out. And it is holiday season, so I hope everybody has a safe and quiet holiday. And I hope everybody enjoys that. And Charon, I want to thank you so much for agreeing to be a guest on the show, and we'll have you on again in the future.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure.
That's it for this week. Please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave a review. We love to hear what you think, and a 5-star review really helps others find the show. You can also join the conversation with listeners, cat caretakers, and me on Facebook and Instagram. And don't forget to hit follow or subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, YouTube, Stitcher, or wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a single show. Thanks for listening, and thank you for everything that you do to help create a safe and healthy world for cats.